This is Current Sports.
Boy, oh boy, is it one scorching hot Tuesday outside. Oh man, I hope you all are chilling in the pool and drinking an ice cold lemonade, listening to Current Sports, because man, is it a scorcher, ladies and gents. Oh boy, I'm your host Al Martin, as always here on Current Sports. So honored that you have allowed us to be a part of your Tuesday afternoon, and we have a sizzling hot show for you as we will talk to Tom Shanahan. Yes, MSU journalism alumni, as he has one unbelievable book coming out. I can't wait to dive into this as he talks about the integration of football in college football, to be exact, when it has to do with the green and white right here at Michigan State University. It's an unbelievable book. We'll dive into that with Tom in just a sec. We'll also talk Red Wings, Rory McIlroy, and have you heard the comments that Tony Dungy had about Michael Sam? If you haven't, boy, oh boy, are you in for one heck of a discussion. Don't go anywhere, folks, because we'll talk about that and so much more, but as custom here on the show, here's Alex Schar with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
Good afternoon. I'm Alex Schar, and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Tuesday, July 22nd. Highland Springs, Virginia receiver Felton Davis and Mesquite, Texas cornerback Josh Butler verbally committed to the Spartans on Monday night, announcing their decisions on Twitter. Both are rated three-star recruits, and their commitments give MSU 10 players in its 2015 recruiting class. The 6'3" Davis had narrowed his list down to 10 schools before picking MSU. He was considering Louisville, Miami, Florida, Missouri, Nebraska, Vanderbilt, Virginia, Virginia Tech, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. The scholarship offers for 5'11 Butler included Arkansas, Baylor, Boise State, Miami, and Tennessee. The Detroit Tigers beat the Arizona Diamondbacks 4-3 at Chase Field Monday night in game one of a three-game set. Justin Verlander allowed 6 hits, 3 walks, and 3 earned runs over 6 2/3 innings for the Tigers. He also had 5 strikeouts, which put him 3rd all-time in Tigers strikeout leaders. The Tigers had a 3-0 lead before Verlander gave up his first hit in the 4th inning. The Tigers are back in action tonight for 9:40 first pitch. Rick Porcello takes the mound against Chase Anderson. Former Colorado point guard Spencer Dinwiddie agreed to a 3-year deal with the first 2 seasons guaranteed for the Detroit Pistons. The point guard, who left Colorado after his junior season, is rehabbing a knee injury that forced him to miss a significant portion of last season. There has been air of mystery surrounding Dinwiddie, whether he will be able to play next season. Former University of Detroit Titan guard Ray McCollum scored 29 points as the Sacramento Kings came back from an 8-point deficit in the final minutes to beat the Houston Rockets 77-68 in the NBA Summer League Championship game Monday night. The Kings went 6-1 in Las Vegas, and McCollum more than saved his best for last. He scored a total of 55 points in his first 6 games in the tournament, then connected on 9 of 15 shots from the floor in title game. McCollum appeared in 45 games for the Kings last season and made 10 starts late in the year. The Detroit Lions have announced that they will wear patches labeled as WCF on their jerseys in 2014 to honor the late Lions owner William Clay Ford. Ford bought the Detroit Lions in 1963 for $4.5 million. He passed away on March 9th at the age of 83. In other Lions news, sister of Lions running back Joy Bell has received a kidney transplant. Bell took it to Twitter last night as his sister was on the kidney wait list for 7.5 years. She was diagnosed with renal disease in 2006. Bell recently signed a 3-year deal with the Lions and has raised money and awareness for renal disease, which affects about 1 million people in the state of Michigan. The NFL has announced that more Johnny Football jerseys have been bought off the shelves than any other NFL player in the first quarter of the buying period. Manziel topped Russell Wilson, who came in at number 2, 49ers QB Colin Kaepernick at 3, and Broncos quarterback Peyton Manning at number 4. Michael Sam and Richard Sherman were the only 2 defensive players in the top 10, coming in at 5 and 6 respectively. And lastly, Tony Dungy said he would not have drafted Michael Sam due to the distractions that could come along with it. Dungy told the Tampa Tribune that, quote, "I wouldn't have taken him, not because I don't believe Michael Sam should have the chance to play, but I wouldn't want to deal with all of it. It's not going to be totally smooth. Things will happen," end quote. Those are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Tuesday, July 22nd. Time to send it back to Al to start the show. Lines are now open.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alex. Again, we will be taking your calls throughout this entire hour. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. If you don't happen to be near a phone, but you still want to weigh in, yes, you can do so by opening up that laptop, opening up your smartphone or your tablet, and by going to Facebook.com/currentsports and leaving a comment on our Facebook page or even tweeting me at Al Martin, WKAR. Folks, we have a ton to get to. I'm excited about today's show because we have a lot of talking points for you today. As much has happened in the past day of sports, and as you just heard from Alex, the big story as I was driving into work today, I'm listening to sports talk each and every day on my radio and, you know, reading, you know, different blogs here and there on ESPN.com, Sports Illustrated, and it's hard not to go to any of those sites or to turn on any type of sports radio without talking about, yes, Tony Dungy. And as you just heard, Tony had some interesting comments when it comes to Michael Sam. Michael Sam has now been drafted as the first openly gay player in the NFL. How about that? He was actually honored at the ESPYs last week, getting the Author Asked Courage Award. A really, really touching tribute there. And, you know, Tony Dungy, though, has, you know, who's been just an unbelievable figure and ambassador for the game of football and in the NFL. Of course, he was born right here in Michigan. I mean, he's just an unbelievable, classy guy. I'm a big fan of Tony Dungy, but he seems to be taking a lot of backlash today and yesterday as well due to his comments on Michael Sam. He told the Tampa Tribune when it came to Michael Sam's drafting, of course, Michael Sam has been drafted in the NFL by the St. Louis Rams. He told the Tampa Tribune that, quote, "I wouldn't have taken him, not because I don't believe Michael Sam should have the chance to play, but I wouldn't want to deal with all of it. It's not going to be totally smooth. Things will happen," end quote. Interesting comments. Again, as you see, those comments have certainly, just looking at the context of them, and with really, there's a lot of gray area with this comment for me. And with that gray area, many people have speculated a lot when it comes to just that one quote, especially those, of course, who are in support of the lesbian and gay community, those who are in support of Michael Sam. Many have come out and voiced their thoughts on this. And Tony Dungy, to put it plain and simple, folks, is just getting bashed each and everywhere you look. I definitely look forward to Tony. He's definitely going to have to come out if he wants this to end. He's going to have to come out and either retract what he said or clarify it in some way, shape, or form. But I'm asking you all to call in. That's going to be one of the big talking points for today's current sports. I want you all to call in and give your thoughts on Tony's comments on Michael Sam. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Folks, we'll also be talking about the Red Wings Arena District. If you haven't seen the pictures of this unbelievable $650 million renovation plan who Mike Ilitch is in charge of, you better start Googling right now. I mean, it is unbelievable. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, but we really didn't expound upon it. I definitely had some points I wanted to make when it came to the city of Detroit and its impact on the national stage. But we're going to dive into that more. And, hey, we didn't even get to Rory McIlroy. We had such a packed show yesterday that we didn't even get to this unbelievable young golfer who is taking the golf world by storm, Rory McIlroy, winning his third major, getting that win at the British Open at the tender age of 25 years old. Man, oh, man, it was one remarkable weekend for him. And quite the opposite for my favorite athlete, Tiger Woods. Yeah, Tiger just can't seem to – I tell you what, he'll come out and have a good first round, but for him to put together four consistently solid outings – at a major or just in a golf tournament, period. I mean, Tiger just hasn't done it in quite some time, folks. We'll definitely talk about that. And, hey, it's Top 5 Tuesday, folks. Each and every Tuesday, we list a top 5 subject in the world of sports. And today's Top 5 Tuesday centers on MSU men's basketball and the Summer League. And we're going to give you our top 5 takeaways from the Spartans' performance at the Summer League. Guys like Keith Appling, Gary Harris, Adrian Payne. We even saw Shannon Brown and Kalen Lucas even participating. And how about even, you know, to take away from the Spartan feel really quick, how about Travis Bader even getting some playing time during the Summer League? And pretty efficient, to say the least, during his outings. So we'll talk about that. Again, the top five takeaways from Spartan performances. And, yes, we will talk Tigers, folks. We will talk Tigers. As the Tigers seem to get back on track, Justin Verlander having a pretty nice outing yesterday. How about JV getting back on the saddle and proving many people wrong, including myself, that, hey, he may still have something in the tank. So, yeah, we'll talk about that again. Our phone lines will be open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Also want to remind you all that, yes, I am off vacation now. It's back to business, back to work, and hey, Current Sports TV returns this week. I'm excited about it. I'll be sitting down with Desmond Ferguson. Desmond Ferguson had quite the career as a high school basketball player over at the house that Magic built. Yes, Lansing Everett High School. Man, oh, man. I mean, there's constant stories from those who stay around this area and who know about mid-Michigan basketball and can recount the times and the rivalry that, if you remember, Ron Banks, who's now a head coach also in the area for a varsity basketball team, and Desmond Ferguson had back in the day. I mean, they used to go at it, folks. And I can't wait to chat with Desmond about that and also the pro-am that he has taking place right now where many NBA players and former Spartans come back and, you know, get to fine-tune their skills against that kind of talent. They will actually be playing tonight, actually, as well. So we'll talk to Dez about that and so much more and get his thoughts on the status of high school, boys, varsity, basketball, hoops. Can't wait to chat with Desmond. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so. We tape tomorrow. Yes, each and every Wednesday we tape, but we switch the time for the summer from 6 p.m. to 10 a.m. Yes, rise and shine, folks. Current Sports. Start your day by coming out to a taping, all right? Again, Desmond Ferguson tomorrow, 10 a.m. taping right here at the WKAR-TV studios. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. I can't wait to sit down with Desmond and see all of your beautiful, smiling faces each and every Wednesday. All right, well, you know what? I'm excited about today's guest because I'm sitting right here, you know, in the booth, looking down at the very first chapter of a book that you are going to want to purchase, folks. It's entitled Ray of Light. It is authored by Tom Shanahan. Tom is an MSU alum. That's right. He graduated right here, got his degree in journalism, and this book is pretty interesting, to say the least. Tom is with us here in the studio today to talk all about it. He's a college sports editor, writer, and, again, author of Ray of Light. He's going to talk about all of that and so much more. Tom, thank you so much for joining me today.
A pleasure to be here. First, saw you when I was back here for the Spartan Sports Journalism Classic.
Yes.
You got introduced a couple years ago, and then I wanted to say hello last year, but Jack Ebling had me on his show, and I missed you.
Right,
so,
right.
Finally catching up with you.
Finally, we are catching up, Tom, and, you know, it's great, you know, talking with you. And we talked a little bit before we took the air today about this incredible piece of work that will be released, I believe, September 4th. Am I right?
Correct.
September 4th. It's entitled Ray of Light, and it really dives into the integration of college football and also the 1965-66 Michigan State football team, an era which really broke down the barriers when it comes to integration, not only in Michigan State football, but also in just in today's game, college game in general. Where did the inspiration, first time to start the discussion, where did the inspiration come for you to write Ray of Light?
Well, we moved here, my family, to Big Rapids. My dad was a professor at Ferris State in 1964, so I was a kid when those great 65-66 teams came along. So I've been a Michigan State fan since I lived in the state. Only applied to one college, Michigan State.
That's it, no other.
Yeah.
Nice.
Got accepted, so I didn't bother with anything else. And I always knew as a kid that there was something unusual about this football team, a black quarterback. Nobody else has a black quarterback and so many black players, but it was too young to understand the social significance. But it's always been with me. And as I got older, I wondered, Well, you know, there's Jimmy Ray, there's Bubba Smith, there's George Webster, there's Dean Washington. The last three are all in the Hall of Fame. You know, those are all guys from the South, and they're all stars for Duffy on his Underground Railroad. But there had to be more to it than that, because nobody goes 4-for-4 or 7-for-7, whatever you want to say the All-American count was for Duffy's players from the South. Mm-hmm. So there had to be more to it. And I decided, I got to know Jimmy Ray's son, Jimmy Ray III, who is now a vice president with the Colts.
So you met Jimmy Ray's son first.
Yeah, I was out in San Diego, and I was writing out there, and Jimmy Ray's son was vice president with the Chargers. Mm-hmm. And got to talking with him, and he told me that his dad and the teammates always felt that they were the champions, the national champions, despite that tie with Notre Dame. And
right.
So I saw this as my opportunity to dig into this idea I've always had about what was the Underground Railroad. And Jimmy III introduced me to his dad, and we went from there. His dad was he was eager to get this story told too.
He was. That's what I wanted to talk about. I mean, when you came in contact with Jimmy Ray and, you know, kind of tossed this idea around about putting this book together, I mean, how willing was Jimmy Ray to really tell this story?
Yeah, very willing. All the guys were very willing. And Bubba Smith and George Webster, of course, passed away, but Gene Washington and Clinton Jones is from Cleveland, but still, right, he was part of those teams. All these guys were very willing to talk about it. And what I found out from my research was the missing link was that when Duffy had a network in the South, Minnesota had a couple guys from the South, Illinois had a couple guys from the South, but those were all anecdotal contacts where somebody knew somebody, mm-hmm, and that player made their way north. Duffy actually had a network in the South, across the South. He recruited 44 players, black players from the South, from 1959 to 1972.
Wow.
And they represented 10 of the 13 states in the South. So he was known all throughout the South. And the reason for that was when he first became a national figure in the late 50s, after that first Rose Bowl, he got invited to clinics around the country. And when he went to the South, he was disturbed that there were no black coaches allowed to attend the clinic. And so subsequently, he would fulfill his obligation with the clinic for the whites-only clinic, but he put on his own clinic just for the black high school coaches. And he did it for the coaching fraternity. This is what Hank Bulla and Vince Carroll had told me. They're the only two coaches still alive from those staffs. He said,
right,
Duffy was just doing it because he loved being around coaches, and he loved the coaching fraternity. Well, these coaches came to trust Duffy, and they started to say, hey, I got this player for you.
So that's how it began, with him putting on this clinic for the black coaches who weren't allowed to, yeah, attend the other clinics. They start to develop trust and start to develop a rapport, I guess, with Duffy, opening the door for him to sort of pick into that litter of players, didn't he?
Exactly. And then the other pieces to that is Michigan State already had a reputation for black athletes. Jesse Jackson talks about how watching the Rose Bowl with Michigan State in it, with Leroy Bolden and returning a – I think it was Leroy that returned the punt for a touchdown. The black Americans were very cognizant that this was an integrated football team where black athletes had a chance. And they always thought about Michigan State as a place. The very first passenger on the Underground Railroad was Clifton Rofe. He's from Arkansas. And his high school coach understood that Duffy Doherty played black players. And he was able to make contact with Duffy Doherty and ask him if he'd take a look at his player. Well, Clifton Rofe came up to Michigan State in 1959 and had to ride a segregated train up from until he crossed into the north in Illinois, and then he could switch cars.
Right.
And Clifton Rofe never played. He hurt his knee, never played a down for the Spartans. But he says he's indebted to the people of Michigan State because he escaped the South, graduated, and he just recently retired as a dentist after 40 years.
Wow.
And oh, by the way, his son is Willie Rofe, the Pro Football and College Football Hall of Famer.
I gotcha. Wow. Just to put that into context, folks.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with Tom Shanahan. Tom, of course, an MSU journalism alumni, has a pretty interesting book concerning the integration of college football and, of course, that 1965-66 legendary Michigan State football team. The book is entitled Ray of Light, will be out in September, September 4th, to be exact. And to put into context really quickly, Tom, on just how integral the Michigan State football program and Duffy was to integrating blacks in the game of football. I mean, to compare to other schools up here in the North.
Yeah.
I mean, were there any other schools doing this?
Well, like I said, everyone had a handful of players, but nobody openly recruited black players just because they were good players.
Right.
Not because they had some kind of quota or whatever. They recruited, Duffy recruited the best players he could find, and a lot of those players were black players in the South that didn't have a chance to play anywhere else.
Right.
And then the other element that made it work here at Michigan State is John Hanna was all for integration. He was pushing integration all along. So it's not like Duffy had to worry about his president and didn't want him recruiting so many black players from the South.
He so that all, helps, too. Yeah.
And the pieces all fit together here at Michigan State in the 1960s. And then this is another important point. Jesse Jackson talked about how he was a big fan of Jimmy Ray because he was a quarterback. And there were no black quarterbacks in that era. And they just felt that it was important for all those black athletes, Bubba Smith, Jimmy Ray, Gene Washington, George Webster, they didn't have to be out protesting for the civil rights movement. They were making a significant contribution just by being seen on TV, read about in the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of perfect examples of that is, let me go back one step further. A couple of perfect examples of that is Jimmy Ray was from Fayetteville, North Carolina, never dreamed he could play in the Big Ten. And he was a three-year starting quarterback at his high school.
Mm-hmm.
His sophomore year, he's watching the Rose Bowl, and that was the year Minnesota won with Sandy Stevens, who was the first black All-American quarterback. He was from Uniontown, Pennsylvania.
Right.
And he's watching the Rose Bowl, and Sandy Stevens gets introduced at the beginning of the show. And Jimmy sees it's a black guy. He didn't know Sandy Stevens was black.
Didn't know at all until that moment. Wow.
And from that point, Jimmy started thinking he could play Big Ten football. And
just being seen like that, seeing
exactly.
someone else that looks like you on that type of stage just does so much as far as that inspiration goes.
It's hard for people to understand what segregation was back like that.
Right.
But that's what Jimmy thought. He would never have a chance. And then you take that another step further. Tony Dungy, his father was earning his PhD at Michigan State, and he was living on campus and going to Michigan State games when Tony was playing. And Tony Dungy wrote the foreword for this book. And Tony says it was so amazed him to see a black quarterback that when he and his buddies played football in the backyard, he was Jimmy Ray.
Wow, he was Jimmy Ray. That's who he looked up to. Tony Dungy looked up to.
He wasn't some guy in the NFL. He was Jimmy Ray.
Oh, boy, that speaks volumes to the impact that that those who are a part of this unbelievable movement had during that time. Unbelievable stuff. For you, when looking at this book, I mean, you tossed out some names like Jesse Jackson and, of course, Jimmy Ray, is entitled Ray of Life, for goodness sake, and all of these characters who had such an integral part during this era to integrate the game of college football. When compiling and sitting down with all these individuals, I mean, how tough was it was it tough at all to get all of them to sit down and talk to you about that time?
No, they're so proud of what they did here at Michigan State and the opportunity that Duffy Doherty gave them. Jimmy talks about how courageous Duffy Doherty was to play him as a black quarterback because he knows the hate mail that Duffy received.
Right.
And they're just so grateful for the opportunity they received here because they wouldn't have received it in any other place. And certainly as not as a group like they had. There was 20 black players on the 1966 team. 11 of them were starters. Now, that doesn't sound like very much. But when they played Notre Dame in the game of the century, 1-2.
Yeah.
Notre Dame had one black player, Alan Page.
That says a lot.
And most of the schools only had 3, 4, or 5 black players. USC, when they won their national championship in 1967, you know, USC has a history of integration.
Right.
1967, they only had 7 black players.
So MSU had a far above heels players than them.
20 was off the charts.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, and it just started, and it led step by step to more schools giving more black athletes opportunities.
And, you know, when talking with you, Tom, before we took the air today, something that really amazes me when looking at this era and talking to these different players, these different African-American players who Duffy recruited and brought on to the Michigan State football team, I would think, you know, just sitting and just thinking about and letting that thought marinate on your mind, that I would think that during that time, those black African-American players would come in contact with some sort of backlash from the public. I mean, because racism was certainly still going through the roof at that time, and to see something like this that hadn't been seen in any other program in the North, I mean, but what's amazing is that you told me that when talking with these different players like Clinton Jones and Gene Washington and so on and so forth and Jimmy Ray, they didn't receive any backlash from anybody, really.
Right. The only time there would be a problem is if maybe they went off campus for housing and things like that. But as long as they were in the campus environment, they said it was an oasis.
And why do you think that is so?
I think it started with John Hanna, that the faculty, I quote one of the prominent faculty members, Richard Lewis, who said that John Hanna was for integration, and it was obvious to everyone on the faculty. They knew it. It pervaded the campus.
Right.
And so everyone is accepting of this this attitude. And there just weren't incidents. I was when Clinton Jones went into the Hall of Fame in 2012, I came back for that. That was part of my research. And Clinton had told me this story earlier, but he also was asked it at the press conference.
Right.
A reporter said, well, surely, you know, everything was great on the team, but surely he had problems with the students. And Clinton said, no, I never had any problems.
No problems with the students at all either.
And then he said, I'll take that back. And this is in my book. And I wanted him to be quiet because I didn't want him to tell this story until it was in the book. But but nobody picked up on it. Everybody let that story go.
Yeah.
And Clinton said, I take that back. There was one thing. Clinton was voted Mr. MSU his sophomore year in the spring.
Yeah.
And first time a black man had been Mr. MSU. And,
wow.
And Clinton says, I don't know how this happened, but I got voted Mr. MSU. and then there was Miss MSU, who was a white woman, and she wouldn't dance with Clinton at the ball, which was the custom.
Oh, she wouldn't.
Yeah.
Okay. So if that was the one incident that he had.
That's the only one Clinton mentions, and it still breaks his heart to this day. I write in the book, it's like he wishes he could wipe that one single incident from otherwise a blissful experience here.
That's an unbelievable story right there, Tom. So, you know, Tom, when talking with these different players like Clinton and Gene and so on and so forth, I mean, how thankful were they to Duffy about all the doors that he opened here at Michigan State for them?
Oh, very grateful. They say that everything that they've accomplished in their life is because of Duffy. And, you know, the other thing to think about is the opportunities Duffy gave these guys is you've met Gene Washington's daughter.
Right,
she's
exactly.
She's a lawyer.
Yeah, Maya Washington, exactly. Yeah.
And Clint, another example of a guy who got hurt and didn't really play was Ernie Pasteur.
Yeah, Ernie Pasteur, exactly.
His daughter teaches law here at Michigan State.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. Okay.
His son is a West Point graduate.
Wow.
Jimmy Ray's son might end up being a general manager. He's on the track for it.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
Clifton Rose's son was one of the all-time great offensive tackles. So it wasn't just the opportunity he gave these players. It spread on to the next generations.
Without a doubt. It's certainly evident through those examples. We're running out of time real quickly here, Tom. For those that read Ray of Light, what do you want them to take away from this book?
Well, I want them to appreciate and understand Duffy Daugherty's legacy here, that he was the leader of the integration of college football. I go into quite detail comparing Duffy versus the preeminent college coach of the time, Bear Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
And Bear Bryant, if you ignore the fact that he was overlook the fact that he was a great coach and just look what he did as a leader of men, he dragged his feet on integration. There was so much going on in the 60s that should have enlightened him to be on the right side of history instead of the wrong side of history.
Yeah.
But Bear Bryant did not dress a black player until 1971. He never put on clinics for black players like Duffy did, and black high school coaches like Duffy did in the South.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he had zero knowledge of black athletes in his own state. That's another myth I bust in the book about him sending black athletes to the North.
Right.
It was proven in a lawsuit down there brought by the Alabama Afro-American Student Association that Bear Bryant knew nothing about black high school coaches and black high school football players. The only reason Bear Bryant began to recruit black players because the Alabama high schools were desegregated. Why would
exactly.
you continue to be?
Yeah.
His first black player was Wilbur Jackson, and he was recruited in 1970, but he wouldn't have played varsity until 71 because that's what the rules were back then. Well, Wilbur went to a black high school in 68, and he went to an integrated high school in 69 when he was recruited by Bear. That's the only reason he broke down.
So that's why.
Yeah. But this 1970 USC-Alabama game has been distorted to such great lengths that it makes it sound like Bear Bryant was the leader of integration Well, he was 10 years behind Duffy, and I feel that a lot of Duffy's legacy has been usurped by Bear Bryant's apologist, and I hope to straighten that out in this book.
Well, I certainly cannot wait to read it. Again, Tom, how can those purchase this book in September?
Well, it's the MSU bookstore already has it in order, and hopefully there's going to be a book signing homecoming weekend. That's kind of the plan. It's not finalized yet. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it'll be on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and the usual places.
Well, we will certainly I can't wait for it. There will be multiple copies in my book room, okay?
Great.
And Tom, before we, it's kind of a segue into our next segment. Of course, you have a foreword here by the great Tony Dungy. I mean, what was that like? How'd you get him involved in this book?
Yeah, everybody asked me that. Here's how easy it was, because Tony Dungy considers Jimmy Ray a mentor.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Jimmy, you know, everybody likes Tony Dungy. He's universally liked. He'd be the best guy to write the foreword. Jimmy called Tony. And Tony said, okay. And I said, Tom, when do you need it? And I said, a couple weeks. And he sent it to me by email. That was it? That was simple.
That easy.
Yeah, and that's the respect he has for Jimmy Ray.
Yes, that tells volumes in that regard. And, you know, and Tony, like I said, you know, to start the show here today, Tom, and you and I talked about it again, Tony Dungy is receiving a lot of backlash for his comments on the whole Michael Sam situation. How surprised were you from it? And do you think people are reading too far into it? What do you think about it?
Yeah, I was surprised by it. I wouldn't expect Tony to have said something like that. He needs to kind of rethink what he said, mm-hmm. because he's brighter than that. And, you know, he did say that he wasn't against him having an opportunity. He was just afraid of the controversy. But he's got to remember a lot of white coaches said the same thing about having black athletes in their locker room.
Exactly.
And I think he'll come to that realization. He's too smart to stick by the way that thing is being talked about right now.
Yeah, it certainly is. All right. The great Tom Shanahan, college sports editor, writer, and author of Ray of Light. Cannot wait to read this book. Again, September 4th, people, mark your calendars and get this book. You are going to want to have it. Hey, Tom, it's a pleasure. Thanks a lot for joining me on today's Current Sports.
Thank you for having me.
All right, folks. Well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we will talk about that whole Tony Dungy incident. You're getting Alex and I's thoughts on it, and also we'll talk Rory McIlroy, Red Wings, and hey, it's Tuesday, Top 5 Tuesday, that is. Folks, don't go anywhere. We'll return in just a sec. Like a Fifth Avenue diamond, and they don't make you like they used to. You're never going out of style. Ooh, pretty baby, this world might have gone crazy. All right, welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host. Oh, man, I hope you all are staying cool outside. It is about 88 degrees. My goodness, folks. I would definitely like to be in the pool right now and sipping some lemonade and some tea or whatever is my beverage of choice. But, hey, we got stuff to talk about here on Current Sports. I'd rather be here with you all. All right, folks, hey, our phone lines are open right now. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We will talk about anything that is on your noggin, and we have a ton to get to with about 30 minutes left in the show. So let's start off really quickly by talking about the Red Wings Arena District Project. We kind of alluded to it yesterday. It's a $650 million renovation plan that is going to be taking place. Downtown Detroit, it is expected to be finished by the year 2017. If you have not seen the pictures of this thing, you better start Googling right now. Alex, did you get a chance to check out this? Because it was one of the highlights of the weekend for me.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a mixed emotion, Al, because as much as the new renovations are great, there's a cost for everything in life. And when you look a little bit more into this, the residents that are living there and the current residents might be paying a little bit of a price for this new renovation. I don't know if you looked into it.
Yeah,
that's
one of the very first things that crossed my mind when I saw the pics. I said, oh, this is fine and dandy. It looks absolutely gorgeous. As far as the looks and just the overall design and schematics behind the entire project, it is off the charts, unbelievable. It will be one of the best sporting venues in this entire nation, folks. But the thing is, you have to think about economically, what will this mean for those residents, as you just talked about, Alex, those who live there. And as far as the taxpayers go, again, this is a $650 million project being done in the city of Detroit, downtown Detroit to be exact. Detroit, it's where I was born and raised. It's where I was this past week to see my family. It's where my heart is. And one of the biggest questions when looking at a project like this is, where in the world is the money going to come from to finish a project like this? And is it going to come from taxpayers' dollars? Because if it is, I don't know, man, if the bill can be footed by those residents right now. I mean, Detroit just filed for bankruptcy not too long ago. So when you talk about the economic issue here, it's where exactly is this money going to come from? The schematics of that haven't been laid out just yet. But that's the thing I'm nervous about right now, Alex.
Yeah, and it's certain that a lot of the money will come from the Illiches, and some might come from Dan Gilbert.
I heard that from the Illiches, it seems as though $200 million are going to come from them. But hey, you still got, what, $400 million to think about
right
there.
But either way, that's going to totally create a dichotomy in the city, because you have some of the residents that I'm sure would love a new entertainment district that think that starting from the sports aspect and the entertainment aspect of the city will, in fact, help the economy. But I'm sure that there's the other side, that having sports and entertainment is the wrong vision for Detroit. Maybe you start with some better grassroots and go the other ways. Maybe you start with more of the arts side of things. Maybe you start with some other aspects of culture. So I feel like that the dichotomy between the different residents and where that money is coming from is going to create a bit of a debate.
Yeah, it definitely is, and that's why we're definitely talking about it here on the show. Again, if you want to give your thoughts on the new Red Wings Arena District, again, check out the pictures. It's redonkulous, folks. Again, call us right now, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, folks. And you know what? Looking at it right now, you know, something my grandfather always used to tell me, Alex, when I was growing up, and, you know, we would always talk about economic issues and certain things like that. My grandfather was really big into politics and the allocation of money. And, you know, in a situation with Detroit, again, not too long ago, they filed for bankruptcy, for goodness sake. The economic status of many of them, many of those living in the city right now, is not great, by no means. But in order to make money, this is my grandfather always said, son, in order to make money, you got to spend money. And that's exactly, I think, the situation that we have right here when you talk about this new arena district that is supposedly being done in the year 2017. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this thing pans out. It is going to be absolutely gorgeous. Again, I'm looking right here at an article, and it says that, quote, the project is expected to generate at least $1.8 billion in total economic impact. Now, let me repeat that. The project is expected to generate at least $1.8 billion in total economic impact, 8,300 construction-related jobs, and 1,100 permanent jobs. Boy, say the least, folks. I want to get your thoughts on it again. Call us right now at Current Sports, 517-355-9527. I want to definitely get your thoughts on the new Red Wings Arena District. It's exciting stuff. Well, let's transition out into a topic that we just wrapped up with, of course, Tom Shanahan, our guest for today's show. He is the author of Ray of Light, which deals with the integration of college football and the 1965-66 Michigan State Spartans. A very interesting book. The foreword for this book that will be released on September 4th is written by, yes, the great Tony Dungy. You know, Tony, he certainly looks up to the Michigan State football team for various reasons. Jimmy Ray was one of his heroes when he was growing up. And Tony is not only we're not talking about Tony on the show just for his foreword in Ray of Light. We're talking about Tony to his comments. one, Michael Sam. If you haven't heard, and if you joined us, if you are joining us late here on Current Sports, Tony Dungy had some comments. He talked to the Tampa Tribune about Michael Sam. Of course, Michael Sam being drafted as the first openly gay NFL player. And Dungy had this to say, quote, "I wouldn't have taken him. Not because I don't believe Michael Sam should have the chance to play, but I wouldn't want to deal with all of it. With all it's going to be, it's not going to be totally smooth, excuse me. Things will happen." End quote. Those words are sparking up a lot of debate and backlash. Negative backlash, I should say, concerning Tony Dungy, his views on the lesbian gay community, and his views on, quote, distractions in the NFL. If they call her right now, Dave, who wants to weigh in on it. Dave, how you doing? What is the current sports? Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me. We're glad to be on the show. Real quick, let's just point out the fact that you're letting your NFL, Mr. Shanahan. Let me say that there were those in the banking community that helped support the black athletes as they migrated to North Bay football. He was a campus supporter of the athletes. Let's not the fact that there were black members of the Atlantic community that helped those athletes along. Also, so I just wanted to point that out. There was support for those guys, both on and off campus.
Right. And Dave, you in the area that you're in at that time, just curious. Were you did you grow up around the area during that time as well?
There were a lot of black guys like in the area, older gentlemen that are in there in the 70s or 80s.
Right.
Homosexual aspect.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that
Right. And you know what? When looking at this, Dave, it seems as though, looking at his comments, it seems as though Tony Jones should have clarified and gone deeper into what exactly he meant. Because again, it's a lot of gray areas to what he says, gray areas that are really being hard to understand, as clear and concrete. Dave, well, that's great caller right there. Thanks a lot, Dave, for your insight into this whole situation. Again, if you can give your comments and thoughts on this Tony Dungy, Michael Sam, my discussion, you can do so by doing just like Dave, just like 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Alex, you know what? That's kind of the route I was going to take. I think Dave hit it right on the head, to be honest with you, as far as my views on this go. Because if you look at Tony Dungy, it's a figure in it's not even in football, but just in sports in general, who is looked at as a guy who's always been classy, an upstanding gentleman, a guy who's been an unbelievable ambassador for the league. He's covered it here in Michigan.
He got to serve on the president's council.
Exactly. I remember being a reporter at Channel 6. I went down and got to meet the man, and he got inducted into the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame, along with Team Cleaves and Steve Smith and others. I mean, he's an unbelievable character, a classy man. His comments that he made were very, very vague in two regards. Because, you know, when he made these comments, he said that things will happen. What things are you talking about, Tony? When you talk about, you know, talking about nobody, I don't think Michael Smith should have the chance to play. I wouldn't want to deal with all of it. What is it, Tony? So he's definitely going to have to come out. In order to stop this fiasco and the negative backlash that he is getting, he's going to have to come out and clarify what he meant. But just reading into that quote and what he said, this is really the reason why I think he's getting a lot of this backlash. Tony Dungy has always been an outspoken Christian man. His beliefs have held him to be the classy guy that we've all seen Tony be during his entire career. And his story, when it comes to, you know, an outspoken Christian belief system, being that religious, many of those in that regard are against gays and lesbians in the community, just being completely honest. And that is the reason why, when I've heard from numerous radio shows throughout the morning, and read many blogs throughout the morning, and watched ESPN, that is the reason why that community is coming out, because they're jumping to the conclusion that Tony Dungy is totally, the reason I make those comments is because he's totally against what Michael Sam stands for as far as his sexuality or his concern. Well, Tony didn't come out and say that, but they're jumping to that conclusion based on the vagueness of his quote. Now, I will say this. Tony Dungy NFL coaches, executives, and personnel were probably thinking throughout those 7 or so rounds in the NFL draft. And because with this whole Michael Sam situation, him being the first openly gay NFL player in the history of the league, that brings attention. That doesn't just give you coverage on ESPN. It gives you coverage on Oprah. It gives you coverage on Good Morning America. It gives you coverage on Inside Edition. It stems, it just goes beyond sports. And as an NFL coach or NFL executive, as being, you know, putting your mindset into their shoes, trying to put myself in their shoes, You don't want distractions. You want to be able to run your program, go day in and day out in practice, handling business, not having a media fiasco surrounded by Michael Sam. And Tony was just being blunt and honest about it. And as a media member, I hate, and you know this, Alex, when we go in the locker room sometimes and talk to players, they give us the vague cliche answers left and right. We won because we played hard. We did this because of this. And you know, it just gets boring. And we always, especially in a situation like this, we appreciate honesty in our business. And Tony Dungy was completely honest, maybe brutally honest in this regard. So I appreciated his honesty, but I would have liked more clarity in his answer.
Okay, well, one other aspect that you did not mention is the actual quote itself. If you're listening at home, if you read the quote in the Temple Tribune, you'll see one characteristic of it. Right after he says, I'm going to pull it up right here. Why don't you read the quote one more time?
Yeah, the quote said, quote, I wouldn't have taken him. Not because I don't believe Michael Sam should have the chance to play, but I wouldn't want to deal with all of it. It's not going to be totally smooth. Things will happen.
Now, after he says, I wouldn't want to deal with all of it, it says dot, dot, dot. What that means is he went on to say something else and then come back to say, it's not going to be totally smooth. Dot, dot, dot. Things will happen. Now, in those pauses, it's not a matter of fact that he's thinking about what he's going to say next. It's not what I'm saying at all. At all. What should we do? Most likely, after he said the first sentence, before he went on to say it's not going to be totally smooth, he probably went on to a different tangent on something else. And he said, again, Brandon, good luck, and I'm sure that he could have said anything, or that he could have said anything. So what I'm saying is, it's not that, is this quote was word for word what he said. This quote could have been totally misconstrued. It could have been totally taken out of context, and they left out some of the context for and what he actually meant. So here they're saying, don't believe what you always say in the news. This might not be true.
Well,
do you understand where I'm getting
at? I see where you're going. I think it's highly unlikely that that is the case, though. I see what you're saying, and maybe he alluded to something between his quotes, but we took the gist of what he was trying to say. And you know, I'll bring an example. I want to sell a Forbes piece on Michael Sam back in May. And this is coming from Dungy's former boss, longtime NFL executive and ESPN analyst, Bill Polian. And this is what he said regarding Sam, which is basically kind of the same type of feel and point that Tony Dungy just made in his quote. I'm going to read it. Here we go. Quote, one of your questions to you is, as a football player, is he worth all of the trouble we're going to have in terms of the early going with media, with involvement by the league office, with involvement by special interest groups, etc.? Is he worth all of that trouble? End quote. And that quote right there, again, from ESPN analyst Bill Polian, I think was just, you can equate that to the point that Tony Dungy was trying to make in his quote. Does distraction oversee the talent here? That's the key question in this whole thing for me as Alex. For a lot of people I'm seeing are bringing up Michael Vick and the whole dog fighting ring incident. If you remember, Tony Dungy, when Michael Vick was released out of jail and was trying to return to the NFL, remember, Tony Dungy vouched very hard for Michael Vick getting back into the league and getting back on the field and playing and forgiving all sins, if you will. Very quiet. A lot of people are bringing up that incident to when Tony Dungy vouched for Michael Vick and saying, well, why aren't you vouching for Michael Sam? And for me, again, it goes back to distraction overseeing talent in this regard. During that time, let's be honest, Michael Vick was one of the best players in the NFL. Michael Vick was at his prime. He was dominant. He was completely dominant. Talent superseded for distraction here. In this regard, and I understand Michael Sam's SEC plus FA
been player of the year, but Alex hasn't played an NFL game yet. But we don't know how good Michael Sam is going to be here. Distraction overseas of talent here. So in that regard, as well, which I think Dave looked to when he was on college a minute ago, I see where Dave is going to in that regard as well.
Yeah, and that certainly may be the case, but another important part of this, I feel like there's so many parts.
One important part is,
look what just happened last week. Michael Sam wins the Courage Award at the X. And aside from all his coaches and maybe all, like you said, all Christian-based coaches with different values on when they view sports people who are dead, you can't tell me that with all the different world cultures in ESPN, soccer from all times of year,
remember when Michael Sam went up to the podium?
And that's what Matt and I were talking about. And the reason for that is, you look at all the other past curly awards, that's who have paralyzed players, people who have overcome all these different obstacles, and then you have something more of a social political issue here. I mean, that itself, aside from the distraction, was actually limits tone done. Because this isn't just a matter of being in the NFL. This is a matter of someone in sports currently playing that now is the wrong phase of gay rights. This is someone who is be the first proponent of gay marriage, most likely.
Right.
This is someone like Muhammad Ali. He took a stance on the war, and this is now a new spokesman for a very edgy issue. And I think for Dungy, as much as the naysayers say, well, he was a mentor to Michael McKay, he should be a mentor to Michael Sam, this is just a totally different level here. This is a level that isn't... You said, I mean, this is obviously X is enough. This isn't simply measuring him for the ball. This is measuring people's views and values in society.
Yeah.
So I don't think that you can make the argument like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I see there's so many parts to this puzzle, but it is so interesting. It's getting interesting. For Tony to stop this backlash you have received, Tony is going to have to come out and clarify what he said. And I'm interested to see how he does it and what he exactly said. Because it's going to be it's sticky, icky right now. So, and folks, I want to get your thoughts on it. We only have 3 minutes left. But you can go to our Facebook page on facebook.com/current.sports. Also, tweet me at Martin WKAR. We'll post a question on our Facebook page. And on Starnix, it's Tony's Dungy and Michael Sam's controversial issue here. And definitely, we'll read comments on tomorrow's Current Sports. 3 minutes left, Alex. We still have not really dived into it, but I have to before we leave the show today. Rory now. British Open, nothing short of remarkable. I think I can say this now. I think golf, looking at golf right now, and how Tiger Woods has been the face of golf. The Tiger effect is what they call it. They have the Tiger track on ESPN whenever he's playing. But golf, when we talk about who's going to be that next star, that next guy to claim the mantle once Tiger's gone, we got him. Roy McIlroy, I think, is that man.
He will be the guy to step up. But there's something about, and that's not to say that Rory will be the next Tiger.
Oh, he's not going to be the next Tiger Woods, but he's going to be the next. He's the next.
Tiger might be the best of all time.
Yeah, exactly.
So for Tiger, I mean, you have the Stanford story, and then being a black golfer, and there's way more aspects to Tiger that Rory doesn't have. But I agree with you in the way that Rory will take the throne as the top golfer.
Right.
As the top golfer. I wouldn't say the face, because you don't think Phil Mickelson has a bigger face than Rory. But I think he's the young, up-and-coming talent.
Well, I think when Tiger's career was said and done, I think Rory is going to be that new face, the new kid from the block who takes that mantle. And, I want to dive into tomorrow. Tiger's absence from the weekend. And you know what's interesting? Because reading a lot of reports, reading from journalists, who covered the British Open, many were surprised at how there wasn't really the Tiger aura surrounded. Even when Tiger wasn't in contention, you still had an entire gallery following him just because he was Tiger Woods. This year, in this year's British Open, they started. Tiger wasn't in contention as the weekend ensued. But we had seen. They said that the gallery gallery starts as a windy out. Something they had never seen before in an air Tiger Woods event. We'll talk about the Tiger effect tomorrow and so much more, folks. We are unfortunately out of time once again. Tom Shanahan, author of Day of Light, that will be hitting bookshelves on September 4th. Thank you, Tom, for coming on today. You can listen to the current you support with me. KAR is landing as always. Stay cool, folks. And be.